to protest and serve, repeating history. It's the Friday Mixer. This week's been a tough one for the American fabric. Two lives lost at the hands of police officers. Five police officers lost at the hands of a sniper who reportedly said he was tired of white police officers killing black people. How do you start a conversation about policing and protest, about decorum and degradation, when it appears there's not much talking and a lot of yelling, so much anger and finger-pointing and shouting past one another? We in Los Angeles remember, well, police brutality witnessed by the lens of camera and the awful aftermath. Connie Rice is a civil rights activist and co-founder of the Advancement Project here in L.A. She's also a member of President Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. Hi, Connie.
Hi.
Brian Charles is an associate editor at The Hill and former L.A. area reporter. He covered cops right here in Los Angeles. His recent post on Medium is called "Feeling Unsafe in America, the Emotional Toll of Police Shootings and Violence on the Black Conscious." Brian, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You bet. I want to begin way back in 1992, which seems like such a distant memory, but boy, it feels so close today. Mm-hmm. When someone with a video camera caught the brutal beating of Rodney King at the hands of LAPD officers, Connie, I'm going to begin with you, because are we, do you think, witnessing the same thing from a different day? King, by the way, survived that encounter and famously asked if we could all get along. I'm going to ask, has anyone learned anything since then?
Good question, and I think the answer is yes. It's definitely yes. It doesn't feel like it today, and we're all in mourning for both the apparent victims of unprovoked police shootings as well as the awful assassination of five cops. And we need to take a breath, step back, and understand that there are small pockets, especially out here in Los Angeles. We've been working a very long time on trying to get away from the warrior policing that has rototilled the black community and harmed the poor Latino communities. And there's real progress being made in Watts, L.A., if you can believe it, with LAPD, if you can believe it. But for the rest of the country, it doesn't feel very hopeful, because all you do is see more and more of these videos caught on cell phones of police doing apparently unprovoked and unwarranted shootings. And all that does is tear at what little remaining trust there was and completely blows it out of the water. And I think that the message that I would like to leave with people is that we do know how to fix this. And it's not just theoretical. We've actually done it. The problem is it's not to scale. The problem is that policing culture has not agreed to stop its warrior mass incarceration model and move 180 degrees to a guardian trust police relationship-based policing model.
You talked, Connie, about the videos that we're seeing, the heartbreaking videos. And Brian Charles, I'll bring you in because you spent some time, actually, for the past year in Baton Rouge at Louisiana State University. I wonder how much a role technology has played in all of this. There was the video camera, obviously, famously, in 1992. But to disseminate that footage was more difficult. What was it? The guy who recorded that actually delivered the tape to Stan Chambers, I think,
yeah,
at Channel 5, right?
Yeah.
It's not that difficult these days.
Yeah, I mean, I think now things move, quite quickly. I left Baton Rouge on Sunday, and, my first encounter with what happened to Tim Sterling was on social media. I mean, that's exactly how these things are moving. And I think now it is, it's not just, so people who have long said, well, I don't know if these things are as real as or as bad or as brutal as we imagine them to be. Well, those folks are now becoming bombarded with those messages. They're seeing, whether it be Eric Garner, whether it be the situation with Alton Sterling or Philando Castile, they're seeing these things in real time, and they're seeing it in a very truncated manner. So it has a bigger, I think it has a bigger impact on Americans in what they're calling for as far as police reform.
Your post on Medium is called "Feeling Unsafe in America," and I'm curious. I mean, and you hear it time and time again from people in the African American community, where parents have to tell their children, "This is how you deal with police. I don't want you getting hurt or shot or killed. so you have to do this. Is that what the thrust of your post is about?
The thrust of it was a sense of that and a sense of feeling as a person. So I'm 39, so I'm not that old, but a sense that 39-year-old professional with an advanced degree, all the things that America told you to go get, and then being in situations where you say, you know, I don't feel any of the privilege that I thought that I was supposed to have at a certain point in life. And then I'm seeing these things repeated over and over again, and then feeling as if that I wasn't really, really safe, and I didn't have a safe space, to borrow the phrase that you hear in academia, among students. I didn't feel like I had a safe space. And that lack of safety became, you know, why does this keep happening? And to be honest with you, some of it was also a reaction to having covered the McDade shooting in Pasadena. I covered it. I was one of the first reporters on that, and kind of drove the coverage on that. And you start to feel as if, well, why does this happen over and over and over again? And this, and the police stop that happened that I described, where I was asked, you know, if I was on probation or parole, or whether I had guns or drugs in my car. That happened in South Pasadena, which is a really nice place to live. I lived there for a while. And it happened in the middle of me actually covering this. And, there's this kind of feeling that, okay, I've done the things that I thought I was supposed to do, but yet there's no feeling that, you know, I feel safe in that situation. And I don't think privilege should buy me that, right? I don't necessarily, but I get messages all the time to say, hey, you know, you should be okay in this situation. So there was this general feeling of saying, if I go into some of the neighborhoods that I have to go into to cover the stuff that I have to cover, you know, there's an actual threat there. But when I go and make it to the nice neighborhood that everyone tells me, hey, it's a nice, safe neighborhood, there's the threat of being thought to be out of place in a particular setting.
Connie, you say that this can be fixed, that it is fixable. How? You're on this task force with the White House. How? What do you bring police officers and the black community together? Is that happening everywhere? Is there talking? What's the problem, and how do we fix it?
No, it's not happening everywhere, but it is happening in a few isolated places. And where it is happening, you can see the magic that it works. In Watts, which you can't get a more police community embattled place than Watts, California. And it's been that way for at least 70 years. So when Chief Beck and I created the Community Safety Partnership Police, and we went into Watts, 4 housing projects, 10 cops apiece, we said we're going to flip the model. We're going to change all of the incentives. We're going to give the cops the incentives to become guardians who are close to the community. We're going to tell them they're no longer in the arrest business, they're in the trust building business. And they're not going to get promoted unless the community says that this cop has created trust between the cop and the community. And the trick is, you have to have leadership that has its hair on fire to say, we are changing the DNA of American policing and the DNA of the community's reaction to these cops.
How do you do that, though, Connie, and Brian, too? I mean, when you've got on social media, I mean, I saw last night this former Congressman Joe Walsh from Illinois who said, you know, watch out, Obama. We're at war. Watch out, Obama. Real America is coming for you. I mean, that is, to me, that seems like, I mean, it may seem very minute, but it exemplifies some of the attitudes that are out there that you have to try and rise above. And I don't know how you do
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely. Well, you have to. You have to engage people. I had to go. It's one of the hardest things I ever did. I had to go to the grandmothers in Watts and the mothers in Watts. And I had to say, I'm about to ask you to do something that I don't know that I could do. LAPD has murdered 3 of your sons, Mrs. T. They've murdered 2 of your grandchildren and 1 of your sons, Mrs. O. You know, I'm asking you to transcend that, to have those tragedies and your misery over losing your children to LAPD's bullets. And I'm asking you to work with LAPD, a new unit of cops that's not going to be like the rest of LAPD. They looked at me like I had grown a second head. But 3 days later, they called me and they said, you know what? We're willing to try something new.
So-called TV news and comedy shows like The Daily Show are also playing this role in bringing these issues to the fore. The Daily Show's host, Trevor Noah, said this week this.
If you're pro-Black Lives Matter, you're assumed to be anti-police. And if you're pro-police, then you surely hate Black people. It seems that it's either pro-cop and anti-Black or pro-Black and anti-cop, when in reality, you can be pro-cop and pro-black.
Why do you guys think everything is so black and white and the conversation isn't more nuanced? Like, hey, there are crappy people everywhere, crappy cops, you know, there's crime. We can work together to eradicate this problem and also try and fight crime as well.
First of all, I do believe you can be pro-Black Lives Matter and pro-police officer. But both of my grandparents were police officers, you know. But we have a disproportionate number of black males, especially unarmed black males. And, you know, I would point to the Washington Post coverage on this, that won the Pulitzer this year for their coverage in 2015 of this, the Guardian's coverage on this. There's a disproportionate number of black males that are being killed by police officers. And that is not a mistake. That is not something that is just happening because of random incidents, but it is a function of, I think, a culture that happens in policing that says that my life doesn't really have the same value as someone else's life does.
Brian Charles, an associate editor over at The Hill newspaper, former L.A. area reporter as well. Brian, and Connie Rice, civil rights activist and a member of President Obama's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. I want to thank you both for your conversation and for your time tonight.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.